Well, hello there, and welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. It's been a couple of weeks. I've been getting settled in here in Los Angeles and recovering from the World Science Fiction Convention, which was quite an adventure. I think that last time I spoke to you, I was about to go off and pick up my tuxedo from the cleaners and head off to the Hugo Awards. Regrettably, I did not win, but I lost to a hell of a good writer, a guy named Peter Beagle, who's Last Unicorn, I heartily recommend to you, and I'm a young man yet, and I have many hopes for the Hugos as the years go on. Thank you to everyone who voted for me. I lost by just a few votes. It was really quite an honor to get that close to winning. Some of you may have seen that the day after the Worldcon, the Monday after the Worldcon, the short story that you heard podcasted here, iRobot, was published on Rudy Rucker's online magazine, Flurb. Flurb.com, F-L-U-R-B. I recommend it to you. I think if you like the podcast, you'll like the text just as much. Send it to your friends. Tell your neighbors. Little Brother, some of you have been following the adventures of the young adult novel I've written about hacker kids who fight the Department of Homeland Security. It's gone off this week to some publishers, so I should have some big news soon. I think that's pretty exciting, actually. And for those of you who don't read Boing Boing really regularly, yesterday I posted a really heartwarming note I got from Jamie, who's a Navy seaman in the Mediterranean, who's been downloading and printing up my books. They've become a huge hit aboard his ship, and people are reading them instead of talking about girls or how drunk they got or what have you. It was pretty. It was a pretty amazing note. This Monday, speaking of Creative Commons, that's tomorrow, the first meeting of the University of Southern California chapter of Free Culture will convene. I'm one of the people who will be there to help them get underway. Free Culture is a campus movement all around the world of students who work to promote free culture, so Creative Commons and digital liberties, and they've done all kinds of cool projects from putting on art shows to staging demonstrations. And the USC chapter meets on Monday night at 6:30 at the lobby of this Annenberg school, the Annenberg School on campus, in the West Lobby where the Annenberg Center for Public Diplomacy is, right by the front doors. Other news. Well, I'm getting back to work on Theme Punks. That's the novel that some of you read syndicated on Salon. It's going to be done soon, I really, really hope. It's really shaping up to be a hell of a book. I think you're going to like it. So today's story is Ownzord. Ownzord, 0WNZ0RED, is a short story I wrote after being briefed on trusted computing by some of the Microsoft trusted computing architects at EFF. And it inspired me to write a science fiction short story about personal autonomy, what it means to be in control, what it means to have your body or your tools respond to you instead of someone else. The story actually received my first Nebula nomination. I got a second one for my novel, Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom. And it was originally published on Salon. It was the first piece of science fiction Salon ever published. And it was reprinted in my short story collection, A Place So Foreign and Eight More. And speaking of that, the successor to that collection, Overclock, Stories of the Future Present, is moving towards publication quite rapidly. It's being published by Avalon, which is the press that bought Four Walls, Eight Windows, which is the press that published for, Place So Foreign and Eight More. And it's going to have a lot of stories that are familiar from this podcast, After the Siege, When Sysadmins Ruled the Earth, and so on, along with some other stories that you may have heard or read elsewhere. I'm hoping you like it as much as I liked writing them. So without further ado, here is part one of Ownzord. 10 years in the valley, and all Murray Swain had to show for it was a spare tire, a bald patch, and a life that was friendless and empty and maggoty rotten. His only other ever California friend, Liam, had dwindled from a tub of guts programmer-shaped potato to a living skeleton on his deathbed the year before. Herpes blooms run riot over his skin and bones in the absence of any immunoresponse. The memorial service featured a framed photo of Liam at his graduation. His body was donated to medical science. Liam's death really screwed things up for Murray. He'd gone into one of those clinical depression spirals that eventually afflicted all the aging bright young coders he'd known during his life in tech. He'd get misty in the morning over his second cup of coffee, and by the mid-afternoon blood sugar crash, he'd be weeping silently in his cubicle, clattering nonsensically at the keys to disguise the disgusting snuffling noises he made. His waste basket overflowed with spent tissues, and a rumor circulated among the evening cleaning staff that he was a compulsive masturbator. The impossibility of the rumor was immediately apparent to all the other coders on the floor, who, prawn hounds that they were, had explored the limits and extent of the censoring proxy that sat at the headwaters of the office network. Nevertheless, it was gleefully repeated in their collegial fratmosphere of his workplace, and wags kept dumping their collections of conference-snarfed hotel-sized bottles of hand lotion on his desk. The number of bugs per line in Murray's code was 500% that of the overall company average. The QA people sometimes just sent his code back to him, from QAManager@GlobalSemi.com to MSwain@GlobalSemi.com, subject, your code, body, sucks, rather than trying to get it to build and run. 3 weeks after Liam died, Murray's team leader pulled his commit privileges on the CVS, which meant that he had to grovel with one of the other coders when he wanted to add his work to the project. 2 months after Liam died, Murray was put on probation. 3 months after Liam died, Murray was given 2 weeks' leave and an email from HR with a contact info for an in-plan shrink who could help counsel him. The shrink recommended cognitive therapy, which he explained in detail, though all Murray remembered 10 minutes after the session was that he would have to do it every week for years, and the name reminded him of Cognitive Dissonance, which was the name of Liam's favorite stupid Orange County garage band. Murray returned to Global Semiconductor's Mountain View headquarters after 3 more sessions with the shrink. He badged in at the front door, at the elevator, and on his floor, sat at his desk, and badged in again to his PC. From tvanya@globalsemi.com to mswain@globalsemi.com. Subject, welcome back, come see me, body, when you get in. Thomas Vanya was Murray's team lead and raided a glass office with a door. The blinds were closed, which meant dead Murray walking. Murray closed the door behind him and sighed a huge heave of nauseated relief. He'd washed out of Silicon Valley, and he could go back to Vancouver and live in his parents' basement and go salmon fishing on weekends with his high school drinking buds. He didn't exactly love Global Semi, but shit, they were number 3 in a hot, competitive sector where Moore's Law drove the cost of microprocessors relentlessly downward as their speed rocketed relentlessly skyward. They had $4 billion in the bank, a healthy share price, and his options were above water, unlike those poor fucks at Motorola, number 4 and falling. He'd washed out of the nearly best, what the fuck, beat spending his prime years in Vancouver writing government standard code for the Ministry of Unbelievable Dullness. Even the number 2 chair in Thomas Vanya's office kicked major ergonomic ass. Murray settled into it and popped some of the controls experimentally until the S of his spine was cushioned and pinioned into a chiropractically correct form. Thomas unbagged a $4 morning harvest muffin and a venti coconut frappuccino and slid them aside his multi-tiered Swedish disposable modern desk. A little welcome back present, Murray, Thomas said. Murray listened for the sound of a minimum wage security guard clearing out his desk during his exit interview come breakfast banquet. He wondered if Global Semi would forward vest his options, and mentally calculated the strike price minus the current price times the number of shares times the conversion rate to Canadian pesos, and thought he could maybe put down 25% on a 2-bedroom in New Westminster. Delicious and nutritious, Murray said, and slurped at the frap. So, Thomas said. So. Here it comes, Murray thought, sucking up a brain-freezing mouthful of frou-frou West Coast caffeine delivery system. Gonzord. Fired, shit-canned, thinking elite hacker crap made it all seem much more distant. It's really great to see you again, Thomas said. You're a really important part of the team here, you know. Murray restrained himself from rolling his eyes. He was fired, so why draw it out? There'd been enough layoffs at Global Semi, enough boom and bust and bust and bust, that it was a routine. They all knew how it went. But though Murray was on an Air Canada jet headed for Vancouver, Thomas wasn't even on the damn script. You're sharp and seasoned. You can communicate effectively. Most techies can't write worth a damn, but you're good. It's rare. Ah, the soothing sensation of smoke between one's buttocks. It was true that Murray liked to write, but there wasn't any money in it. No glory either. If you're going to be a writer in the tech world, you'd have to be... You've had a couple weeks off to reassess things, and we've been reassessing too. Coding, hell, most people don't do it for very long, especially assembler. Jesus, if you're still writing assembler after 5 years, there's something, you know, wrong with you. You end up in management or you move horizontally, or you lose it. Thomas realized that he'd said the wrong thing and blushed. Oh, shit. Horizontal movement. That's the great thing about a company like this, the company this size. There's always somewhere you can go when you burn out on one task. No, no, no. The Honorable Computing Initiative is ready for documentation, Marie. We need a tech writer who can really nail it. Tech writer. Why not just break his goddamn fingers and poke his eyes out? Never write another line of code. Never make the machine buck and hum and make his will real in the abstract beauty of silicon. Tech writers were coders' janitors, documenting the plainly self-evident logic of APIs and code structures, niggling over punctuation and grammar and frigging style books like any of it mattered. Human beings could parse English, even if it wasn't well-formed, even if you had a comma splice or a dangling participle. It's a 12-month secondment, a change of pace for you and a chance for us to evaluate your other strengths. You go to 4 weeks vacation and we accelerate your vesting and start you with a new grant at the same strike price, over 24 months. Marie did the math in his head, numbers dancing. 4 weeks vacation, that was 3 years ahead of schedule. Not that anyone that senior ever used as vacation days, but you could bank them for retirement or, ahem, exit strategy. The forward vesting meant that he could walk out and fly back to Canada in 3 weeks if he hated it and put 30% down on a two-bedroom in New West. The door was closed and the blinds were drawn and the implication was clear. Take this job or shove it. He took the job. A month later, he was balls deep in the documentation project and feeling, you know, not horrible. The Honorable Computing Initiative was your basic Bond villain world domination horseshit, of course, but it was technically sweet and it kept him from misting over and bawling. And they had cute girls on the documentation floor, liberal arts, electrical engineering, double majors with abs you could bounce a quarter off of, who were doing time before being promoted up to join the first cohort of senior female coders to put their mark on the Valley. He worked late most nights, only marking the passing of 5 p.m. by his instinctive upwards glance at all those fine, firm rear ends that walked past his desk on their way out of the office. Then he went into night mode, working by the glow of his display and the emergency lights until the custodians came in and chased him out with their vacuum cleaners. One night, he was struggling to understand the use cases for honorable computing when the overhead lights flicked on, shrinking his pupils to painful pinpricks. The cleaners clattered in and began pointedly to empty the waste baskets. He took the hint, grabbed his shoulder bag, and staggered for the exit, badging out as he went. His car was one of the last ones on the lot, a hybrid Toyota with a lot of dashboard geek toys, like a GPS and a backseat DVD player, though no one ever rode in Murray's backseat. He'd bought it 3 months before Liam died, cashing in some shares and trading in the giant gas-guzzling SUV he'd never once taken off-road. He aimed his car at his remote at it and initiated the cryptographic handshake, i.e. unlocked the door, and then he spotted the guy leaning against the car. Murray's thumb jabbed at the locking button on the remote, but it was too late. The guy had the door open, and he was sliding into the passenger seat. In the process of hitting the remote's panic button, Murray managed to pop the trunk and start the engine, but eventually his thumb mashed the right button and the car's lights strobed and the horn blared. He backed slowly towards the office doors, just as the guy found the dome light control and lit up the car's interior, and Murray got a good look at him. It was Liam. Murray stabbed at the remote some more and killed the panic button. Jesus, who was going to respond at this hour in some abandoned industrial park in the middle of the valley anyway? The limp dick security guard? He squinted at the face in the car. Liam. Still Liam. Not the skeletal Liam he'd last seen rotted and intubated on a bed at San Jose General. Not the porcine Liam he'd laughed with over a million late El Torito burritos. A fit, healthy, young Liam. The Liam he'd met the day they both started at Global Semi at adjacent desks. Liam fresh out of Caltech and fit from his weekly lot hockey game and his weekend dirt bike rides in the hills. Liam Prime, or maybe Liam's younger brother, or something. Liam rolled down the window and struck a match on the passenger side door, then took a Marlboro Red from a pack in his shirt pocket and lit it. Murray walked cautiously to the car, his thumb working on his cell phone, punching in the numbers 911 and hovering over send. He got close enough to see the scratch with the match headed left in the side panel and muttered fuck with feeling. "Hey, dirtbag, you kiss your mother with that mouth?" said Liam. It was Liam. You kiss your mother after I'm through with her mouth," Murray said, the rote of old times. He gulped for air. Liam popped the door and got out. He was ripped. Bullish chest and cartoon wasp waist. Rock-hard abs through a silvery club shirt and bulging thighs. A body like that, it's a full-time job. Or so Murray had concluded after many failed get-fit initiatives involving gyms and retreats and expensive home equipment and humiliating early morning jogs through the sidewalk free streets of good old Shallow Alto. "Who the fuck are you?" Murray said, looking into the familiar eyes, the familiar smile lines and the deep wrinkle between Liam's eyes from his concentration face. The night was cool, but Murray felt runnels of sweat tracing his spine, trickling down between his buttocks. "You know the answer, so why ask? The question isn't who, it's how. Let's drive around a little, and I'll tell you all about it." Liam clapped a strong hand on his forearm and gave it a companionable squeeze. It felt good and real and human. "You can't smoke in my car," Murray said. "Don't worry," Liam said. I won't exhale. Murray shook his head and went around to the driver's side. By the time he started the engine, Liam had his seatbelt on and was poking randomly at the onboard controls. "This is pretty rad. You told me about it, I remember, but it sounded stupid at the time. Really rad." He brought up the MP3 player and scrolled through Murray's library, adding tracks to a mix, then cranked up the opening crash of an old, old, old punk Beastie Boys song. "The speakers are for shit, though," he hollered over the music. Murray cranked the volume down as he bounced over the speed bumps, badged out of the lot, and headed for the hills, stabbing at the GPS to bring up some road maps that included the private roads way up in the highlands. "So do I get two other ghosts, Marley, or are you the only one?" Liam found the sunroof control and flicked his smoke out onto the road. "Ghost, huh? I'm meat, dude. Same as you. Not back from the dead. Just back from the mostly dead." He did the last like Billy Crystal as Miracle Max in The Princess Bride, one of their faves. "I'll tell you all about it, but I want to catch up on your shit first. What are you working on?" "They've got me writing docs," Murray said, grateful of the car's darkness, hiding his blush. "Aw," Liam said, "you're shitting me." "I kind of lost it," Murray said. "Couldn't code. About 6 months ago. After." "Ah," Liam said. "So I'm writing docs. It's a sideways promotion and the work's not bad. I'm writing up honorable computing." "What?" "Sorry, that was after your time, I guess. It's a big deal. All the semi-companies are in on it. Intel, AMD, even Motorola and Hitachi. And Microsoft, they're hardcore for it." "So what is it?" Murray turned onto a gravel road, following the tracery on the glowing GPS screen as much as the narrow road, spiraling up and up over the sparse light of the Silicon Valley. He and Liam had had a million bullshit sessions about tech, what was vaporware and what was killer, and now they were having one again, just like old times, only Liam was dead. Well, if it was time for Murray to lose his shit, what better way than in the hills, great tunes on the stereo, all alone in the night? Murray was warming up to the subject. He'd wanted someone he could really chew this over with since he got reassigned. He'd wanted Liam there to key off his observation. "Okay, so, the Turing machine, right? Turing's universal machine, the building block of modern computation. In Turing's day, you had all these specialized machines, a machine for solving quadratics, a machine for calculating derivatives, and so on. Turing came up with the idea that a machine could configure itself to be any specialized machine using symbolic logic, software. Included in the machines that you can simulate in a Turing machine is another Turing machine, like Java or a VMware. With me? With you. So this gives rise to a kind of existential crisis. When your software is executing, how does it know what its execution environment is? Maybe it's running on a global semi-Itanium clone at 1.6 gigahertz, and maybe it's running on a model of that chip simulated on a Motorola G5 RISC processor. Got it. Now, forget about that fact for a second. Think about Hollywood. The coked-up Hollywood fat cats hate Turing machines. I mean, they want to release their stuff over the internet, but they want to deliver it to you in a lockbox. You get to listen to it, you get to watch it, but only if they say so, and only if you've paid. You can buy it over and over and over again, but you can never own it. It's scrambled, encrypted, and they only send you the keys when you satisfy a license server that you've paid up. The keys are delivered to a secure app that you can't fucksor with, and the app locks you out of the video card and the sound card and the drive while it's decrypting the stream and showing it to you, and then it locks everything up again once you're done and hands control back over to you. Liam snorted. It is to laugh. Yeah, I know, it's bullshit. It's Turing machines, right? When the software executes on your computer, it has to rely on your computer's feedback to confirm that the video card and the sound card are locked up, that you're not just feeding the clear text stream back to the drive and then to 10 million pals online. But the computer it's executing on could be simulated inside another computer, one that you've modified to your heart's content. The video card is a simulation. The sound card is a simulation. The computer is a brain in a bottle. It's in the matrix. It can't trust its senses because you're in control. It's a Turing machine nested inside another Turing machine. It's like Descartes. What? You gotta read your classics, bro. I've been catching up over the past 6 months or so, doing a lot of reading. Mostly free ebooks from the Gutenberg Project. Descartes' Meditations are some heavy shiznit. Descartes starts by saying that he wants to figure out some stuff about the world, but he can't, right? Because in order to say stuff about the world, he needs to trust his senses. And his senses are wrong all the time. When he dreams, his senses deliver full-on THX all-digital IMAX, but none of it's really there. How does he know when he's dreaming or when he's awake? How does he know when he's experiencing something or imagining it? How does he know when he's not a brain in a jar? So how does he know, Murray asked, taking them over a reservoir on a switchback road, moonlight glittering over the still water, occulted by fringed silhouettes of tall California pines. Or that's where he pulls some religion out of his ass. Here's how it goes. God is good, because part of the definition of God is goodness. God made the world. God made me. God made my senses. God made my senses so that I could experience the goodness of his world. Therefore, why would God give me bum senses? QED, I can trust my senses. It is like Descartes, Murray said, accelerating up a new hill. Yeah, Liam said. Who's God then? Crypto, Murray said. Really good standards-defined crypto. Public cipher systems whose details are published and understood. AES, RSA, good crypto. There's a signing key for each chip fab. Ours is in some secret biometrics and machine guns bunker under some desert. The key is used to sign another key that's embedded in a tamper-resistant chip. Liam snorted again. No, really. Not tamper-proof, obviously, but tamper-resistant. You'd need a tunneling microscope or a vat of Freon to extract the keys from the chip. And every chip has its own keys, so you'd need to do this for every chip, which doesn't, you know, scale. So there's this chip full of secrets. They call it the Fritz chip for Fritz Hollings, the senator from Disney, the guy who's trying to ban computers so that Hollywood won't go broke. The Fritz chip wakes up when you switch on the machine, and it uses its secret key to sign the operating system. Well, the bootloader and the operating system and the drivers and everything. So now you've got a bunch of cryptographic signatures that reflect the software and hardware configuration of your box. When you want to download Police Academy N to your computer sends all of these keys to Hollywood Central, attesting to the operating environment of your computer. Hollywood decides on the fly if it wants to trust that config, and if it does, it encrypts the movie using the keys you sent. That means that you can only unscramble the movie if you're running the Fritz chip on that CPU with that version of the OS and that video driver and so on. Got it. So if the OS and CPU are all honorable, Liam described quote marks with his index fingers, then you can be sure that the execution environment is what the software expects it to be, that it's not a brain in a vat. Hollywood movies are safe from Napsterization. They bottomed out on the shore of the reservoir, and Murray pulled over. You've got it. So basically, whatever Hollywood says goes. You can't fake an interface. You can't make any uses they don't authorize. You know that these guys sued to make the VCR illegal, right? You can't wrap up an old app in a compatibility layer and make it work with a new app. You say Microsoft love this? No fucking wonder, dude. They can write software that won't run on a computer running Oracle software. It's your basic Bond villain world domination horseshit. Yeah, I know. That's it for today. Talk to you in a couple more.